Welcome to the Mythic Life Podcast. I'm your host, Eric Brummett, and joining me today is a good friend of mine and fellow healer and spiritual teacher, Michael Oger. And in this episode today, we're going to be really exploring some of those mystic practices within the Kabbalah and exploring what this is to really discover truth within, you know, some of these larger mythical places, and that we're living in a new era where we do get to find these beautiful mystical places and still have the sense of free will and freedom to explore our spirituality, that we are never stuck in any one thing. So thank you for joining me today, Michael. It's so nice to have you here.
Thank you. Thank you. It's an honor. I'm so excited and honored to be here. Really a pleasure. Thank you.
You know, I have had the opportunity of getting to know you and socializing and being connected with you for a good number of years now. And
6, exactly.
Wow, 6.
Yeah, I remember our first class very well.
And you know, I never really got your story. I don't know, like, what brought you into studying and practicing and becoming a Kabbalah teacher and, you know, where that background is. I know you've been kind of relocating and traveling, that you speak Russian, you were living in Russia. I met you in New York City. You're now in LA, you know, beautiful family, wife, a new child. Congratulations, by the
way.
Thank
you.
But like, this history, what led you on this journey to explore, you know, these mystic practices?
So in this lifetime, it started actually, there was two really big contributors to my journey. And one, the first one was my dad, who was a very educated and open-minded individual. And he really just, you know, showed me the world from him. He connected me to the whole world with so much. And it was really, really special. And always kind of looked for the deeper, the more insight, you know, and very, a really amazing human being. And then also I had a very good history teacher in my 8th grade that probably, you know, it was obviously something that was in me, but he taught us so much about spiritual systems and religions that it led me to a question, like, even though I was raised Jewish, but I'm like, where do I fit in? What is my, you know, what is my practice? What's my, where do I belong, kind of? And that started the journey for me to look into different spiritual systems, religions, etc. And really nothing resonated. Nothing.
When you say spiritual systems, what is that regarding? What is a spiritual system?
The biggest probably spiritual system that I came across was yoga, and the rest were religions. Yeah, I think the only really spiritual one was yoga back then. And that resonated, actually. I really enjoyed yoga and the practice of it and the philosophy behind it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So systems is something that is more of a philosophy and practice than something organized as a dogma? Is that kind of the differential?
You know what? I didn't know back then, but I was using my sense. And what they did felt very dogmatic. And it was kind of something that I had to kind of fit myself into, you know, whether it be Judaism, Christianity, or Islam, or even like Buddhism. It didn't sense like it was me who was choosing. It was me who had to fit myself into the system.
Yeah.
And so none of them really resonated. None of them really, it wasn't, nothing was like, oh, that's it. That's the answer. So I kind of put it aside. And then I think maybe like 3 or 4 years, when I was like 17 or 18, my sister introduced me to Kabbalah. And that was the turning point. There's a great book called Power of Kabbalah. I read it probably in a day and a half. And I literally remember the feeling of walking into my living room, looking outside, and I'm like, this is it. Like, I found what I'm looking for. You know, this is the one for me. And that was it. That's how I started the journey.
Wow. You know, I remember my first Theta class, and when Vianno's teaching and I had the book and I'm reading through the book as she's lecturing, I knew what she was going to say before she would say it. Like, I was hearing it in my mind. And we're going through class, and I remember her saying, you know, you're not learning something new. You're actually remembering that, you know, this is just a remembering, a refresh, and bringing it forward. And that really resonated with me, that, you know, as you're saying, you found this book and like you read through it in a day and a half, and there's a resonance in it, right? There's like a knowing. Totally. You're tapped into something that speaks to our spirit and speaks to our sense of purpose and direction. It has this flow to it.
Yeah. It's a very magical experience.
Yeah. It sounds like we both kind of came into that in a very similar time in our life, you know, as you were saying, your late teens, I was like 21, you know, to really come into this spiritual place at such an early place. I know a lot of the older traditional ways of exploring and learning Kabbalah, because Kabbalah is the mystic practice within Judaism, right? So like, usually that was declared only for men. They had to be older. The kids had to be out of the house. It was like 50 to 60 years old, like later in life, you know, as a more deeper, older tradition. But the Kabbalah Center really kind of brought this out to a larger community and culture and wanted it out for more people, you know, Karen Berg and the Rav, like they really did a huge one. They did a big step bringing it out. And, you know, for those listening, for, you know, those in our audience, maybe you have learned some about Kabbalah or know about the Kabbalah Center, but like, there's a lot of different perspectives here in this episode. What exactly is the practice of Kabbalah for you?
That's a great question. So one of the fundamental principles of Kabbalah is that we were created to experience fulfillment. That's the ultimate purpose of creation and human beings, is that we were, our purpose, our birthright, our destiny is to be fulfilled beyond our beliefs and, you know, what we can imagine now. So that's one of the fundamental principles. And then where it goes is it's giving you tools and different techniques about how you can achieve that, how you can receive more. Because technically, literally the word Kabbalah means to receive, right? And the practice is all about learning, how can I expand my consciousness, open my consciousness in order to receive more fulfillment in any area of my life. So I've been doing it for now, you know, I've been studying and teaching for like more than 20 years now. And obviously it's evolving, right? Like how you do it is the technique is actually constantly evolving, right? And you can, it's inviting things that work for you. Like, for example, Theta healing really resonated with me and worked with me so beautifully. And I still practice and use it and different modalities. But the goal is that you are the creative force in your life. You are the creative, the constructive, the architect of your reality. Mm. And you wanna, one of the key things of practice is to claim that power and claim that ability, that it is you who is the creative force. You're not a victim. It didn't happen to you. It didn't happen by accident or just because, but you are the force of creator. So one of these most important principles is one of the practices that I'm basically choosing every day and as much as possible and deeper, deeper, and deeper. But, you know, there's many other ways of many other tools you can use, right? The text, the meditations, the prayers, the, you know, something called restriction that we use, or pause. But the goal is that you start to get on a journey that you acknowledge and really be clear that you can have much more in everything, in relationships, with your body, with earth, with money, finance, everything. Everything can be expanded. And that's your destiny. So from that point of view, you choose how, what's the best way for you to achieve that?
Yeah. You know, as you're sharing this, I'm getting flashes of people playing guitar.
Mm-hmm.
You know, my father played guitar, and, you know, every time anybody got together socially, there was always a jam session. People always brought their instruments and they would play guitars together and stuff. And his best friend was Chuck Dockum. We called him Chuckles. He would always have a great witty joke and things like that. And he was a really great guitar player, but he played the guitar in such a interesting way. He would hit chords by using, you know, not regular traditional ways of like holding them. And this sense of technique really is an interesting thing. Like, the end goal is to have like a certain tone, right? A certain sound come out, and that there's all these different techniques that we're floating through these days. There's all this in modern day with all these different modalities, all these different practices. And yet through them all, there's certain synchronicities. There's certain things that are so similar to each other. And,
totally.
You know, that's the thing with this place. If it is with religion or philosophies, it's looking for that technique. What is the practice of it? How does that feel and fit in our life? Because he loved playing music the way that he played, but he would be the worst person to learn from, because the way he would, you know, work his fingers was very abnormal.
Interesting. Like a Picasso.
But he could play the same song as, you know, my dad, who was holding, you know, holding the neck and holding the chords in a very different way. For you, you know, you've been teaching 20 years and doing this, but you have also bridged and found these other modalities as well. Like, how do you feel it is in your life to bring tools of different techniques together?
That's one of the beauties of Kabbalah, is that there's no exclusion. There is whatever works for you, use it, right? There's no, you're not allowed to do this. It's simply tools to kind of offer to you. And it's up to each and every single one of us to see how you use it. And obviously no practice or technique is also excluded. So something like Theta Healing, which, you know, Karen practiced and Karen loved. Karen Berg is, like you said, like the founder of a Kabbalah center. And it's probably individual to me, because I'm not going to say that like necessarily every Kabbalah teacher practices it. But to me, it was an amazing tool to discover that what Kabbalah teaches is the limiting beliefs that we have is what limits your ability to receive, right? Your ability to have an amazing relationship or health, etc., is always connected to a certain point of view, connected to a certain belief. And then when I remember it's such a beautiful experience taking those two classes that I took with you, where it was such a simple way of meditation and connecting to this space and energy that just lets you look into these beliefs as simply choices, you know, that you can easily, by connecting to the creator, by connecting to this infinite force, to change them, transform them, you know, see, do they still serve you or do you want to change them, right? So Kabbalah is all about, the big picture of it is for you to enjoy life. So whether it be, if Theta Healing works for you, go for it. So like it did for me, and I also love something called Access Consciousness, you know, So both of those practices are so contributional to my practice of Kabbalah, and it just all comes together in a very beautiful way. Very yeah. contributional and no contradiction at all whatsoever.
We're always finding our way through these beliefs, you know, finding ways to address them and adapt and like find truth. And through that, for me, I've really been navigating and finding like what traditions are meaningful to me, you know, what practices are significant, like when do I design, you know, something mystical myself and design a little ritual, or when do I adopt a ritual? You know, I grew up very non-religious. My parents both went through, you know, their rebellious nature against the religions they grew up with. So as parents, they never really deeply educated us on Christianity. And they're both more like return to nature hippies and studied and practiced a little bit more Buddhist practice of meditation, but like never really overly exposed me to all that much. And so it was interesting when I went into my teens and went into my, you know, early adult life of studying, you know, what these different religions are and reading these spiritual texts, like to come from an outside perspective, looking at them, I always explored that in more reflection back to some of the Theta work of them being techniques mm-hmm. than something that was like rigid and you had to like live by these beliefs. I didn't have beliefs with them as much. And, you know, I think there's something really to that in the way of like holding a sense of free will. And when you're working with people, because you are a teacher, you do coach and counsel people and do your healing work, how do you navigate supporting people through their practices, their religions, and working through their belief systems?
It's so individual and unique, right? Like every single person is completely individual and unique. And it's, there is absolutely no, beside the fact that I would ask the person what they would want to change and what would they want to transform, there's really no structure besides that. I do love to do the Theta meditation of going up to the Creator, because I think that meditation and that ability to invite the creative force and, you know, do the session from that space and with that energy really changes it. But what I see, what I find is that obviously usually what a person comes to, the limiting belief that is always hiding under it is something that they have no idea about. So if outside the session, if somebody would tell them, oh, that's the limiting belief that's stopping you, they would be like, you know, you're nuts. Why would I ever think that? Right. But as you walk through them and as you ask questions and as you talk and as you have this conversation and energetic exchange, then they start to see that, yes, that is something that I'm choosing. I'm choosing a belief that, you know, I need to be single to honor my mom. Okay, that's a belief, that's fine, but do you want to keep it? Is that something that's important to you? But not necessarily, unless a person, you know, when we do sessions, we obviously also access like past life experiences. So sometimes, yes, a very intense religious connection comes. But I would say like 95% of the time, it really makes no difference of what religion or background the person comes from, because it's really about them being a being in the universe and being a being with the creative force. So yes, they might have an intense, you know, I recently had like a session with somebody who had a very intense past life experience in a monastery, right? So yes, a lot of it came up and, you know, a lot of oaths, obligations, etc. But at the end of it, it's like you don't want to make it way too significant than it needs to be also, right? Because you just want to look like Theta Healing also teaches, you want to look at that belief that's holding that whole structure together.
Yeah.
So once a belief is removed, then the whole structure, then the whole pyramid is gone.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, for those listening, if this is something new to you, like exploring this, that you have these different practices that can adjust your mindset, that can create a change of your brainwave cycles to open up for change, and that these practices are meant to be that. They're meant to empower us with these abilities and tools. You know, you can check out more for this in our healing circles. You know, we have them for everybody openly twice a month now to really support and introduce you to experiencing the Theta brainwave. I know when we got to do work together, and I remember coming to a few Shabbats and experiencing Shabbat through the Kabbalah Center versus like just having a family Shabbat with, you know, my in-laws, and really recognizing the difference in that energy, you know, of bringing tradition in. And for me, you know, talking about that sense of these being techniques and abilities, that there's actually a way to pray, you know, like,
yeah.
So often, so many prayers and hopes and dreams aren't actualized, and it doesn't go to that place of fulfillment, as you say, because of how they're praying. You know, like in Theta, we're doing a meditation and altering our brainwave before doing the command, right? If I just sit in my space and do a command, but I'm in a logical mind and I'm in a beta wave, or if I'm just going inside myself to feel safe and I'm going into an alpha wave, it's not the brainwave that facilitates change. You know, that brainwave that facilitates change and healing is a theta state. It's what creates neuroplasticity. It's what allows for our mindset and emotions to change, and is the brainwave that heals, you know, but that's the theta technique, right? So like, I remember seeing like the practice, what prayers are done in what order, and these little rituals and rites that create that space to invite the angels in. You actually could feel the angels coming in that moment.
True.
These traditions are techniques. And
totally.
What is it to explore and really understand what those mystic principles are?
So that's the big, you know, like it looks, if you look on the outside and, you know, when I went to, I only started in the Kabbalah Center through the classes, right? That's what like really drew me, the consciousness. And I, like you said, like I had a very similar experience of after every class, it was not something that I'm learning new, but it was a remembering that was happening. It was something that was already in me. And I actually, when I went to, for example, a Shabbat at the Kabbalah Center, I left right away because I said, this is not for me. I'm not interested. This is not something that I am going to participate. I don't like religion. I don't like religious practices. I don't agree with them, etc. What drew me was the consciousness, right? The practice, the way, the system that it explains how the universe operates. Not those traditions necessarily. So it took me a while. It took me actually 3 tries. I went twice and I left because of what I saw. I was like, okay, I'm not interested in that. This is way too organized religion for me. I'm not doing this. And only on the 3rd time when I came to a Shabbat service, it was a lecture actually. And I'm like, okay, I can listen to a lecture. You know, then fast forward into the future, I'm like, oh, I probably had a very traumatic religious experience in the past life. So
yeah,
that was like an awareness that came.
Yeah, running into those triggers, right?
Yes, yes. But the idea, the way Kabbalists look at all these practices, it's definitely a way to receive and download energy. It's not a tradition or like the way it is very much like Judaism, right? If you look at it on the outside. But when you look at the reasoning of what the intention and the purpose of doing each, you know, ritual, right, or et cetera, that you're doing, the actual intention and the goal is completely different. The goal and the intentions are not like in religion, in Judaism, or in most religions, it's to appease God, to make him happy, or, you know, to be a good, obedient person. But actually, for Kabbalists, Shabbat is a day of transformation, a day of change, a day of changing beliefs of, you know, one of the reasons why the way Shabbat begins is with what's called the Kiddush. And it's basically saying how amazing and powerful the Creator is. So when you think about it logically, what's the most powerful or biggest thing that the Creator has done? You know, people would say, I mean, creating the universe is a pretty big deal, right? Like, that's a massive accomplishment, right? Yeah. But no, what you're mentioning, the greatness of the Creator, you're basing it that he took Israelites out of Egypt. And you're like, what? Like, how could you outweigh these two, right? Like, of course, creating the universe logically is a much greater accomplishment than taking a revolt and some revolutionaries out of a country 3,000 or 4,000 years ago. Like, to me, that's logically one is much bigger than the other. But what the Kabbalists explain is the secret of Egypt. Egypt is actually means your limiting beliefs, your limitations, your, you know, the way how you are limiting yourself, your ego, your opponent, what we call in Kabbalah, your Satan, etc. So exiting Egypt is actually coming out of your limiting beliefs. So the whole practice is really all about you expanding into your greater self. It has nothing to do with a practice or with God or religion, none of that.
And, you know, it's really interesting you bring that up. Like, we're recording this still before Passover.
Right. Yeah.
Like, this episode is going to be airing during Passover. And
happy Passover.
Oh, I got in a lot of trouble at a Passover.
Really?
Yeah, I have a lot of past lives in Egypt as an Egyptian. Mm-hmm. And so, like, I've had to do a lot of belief work around, you know, a sense of memory. And this is where I really run into this of, like, religion versus mythology. And what are the mythological practices? Because a myth is a roadmap to a way of living and learning and growing, where there's also history, right? So, like, so often religion puts them together into the stories. And I find it makes it really hard to, like, filter through, especially with the language, right? So, like, saying, what is your Egypt? What is it that you're freeing yourself from enslavement of? Like, what limiting beliefs? Is a mythology, but then you're using a word that is so familiar of an actual landmass and country and, like, people and, like, a history of what did and didn't happen. And so, like, you know, during Passover, how you do the plagues, right?
Yeah.
With the wine is, like, and on the plate. And, you know, it kept being given to God as the one that was doing it. I was like, no, Jewish people just were really uprising and were really smart and designed things. Like, they knew how to create. And, you know, God's not a murderer of children. You know, like, God is all that is and is actually in a place of love. And it just really fully resonated for me. So that just became this place of a challenge. And I literally stood up during a Passover Seder and, like, said that out loud to the entire audience. And it was kind of an interesting thing.
That's funny.
Yeah. Luckily it was in a Jewish renewal that was very, you know, hippie and liberal, and they enjoyed actually that stimulation of conversation that came afterwards. But this is the interesting thing. Like, we can learn from mythologies and we can break down principles into practices. It's something so important that we can empower people into what traditions they adopt, where they learn from in the way of study, and to not actually navigate like creating negative or limiting beliefs that isolate, you know. And
totally.
I think that's something so important for this modern era, to not run into these divisions and isolations that come out of limiting beliefs and end up creating pain.
Yeah.
So it's an interesting thing. So like that story, that mythology, that history of freeing of enslavement, there is really something to that. And this energy of April, you know, it's Aries. Like we came out of Aries, we're in Aries new moon. You know, we just had we're about to have a solar eclipse, but mm-hmm. I was listening here. Like we had this solar eclipse. I know there's a recognition of some of those principles with these mystic practices, with Kabbalah, of like Kabbalistic astrology, right?
Totally.
A lot of the practices are with the moon cycles and with like...
I mean, the whole Kabbalistic calendar is built on the moon cycle. So the regular calendar that we live by is based on the sun, right? But the Kabbalistic calendar, it's a balance between both the sun and the moon. But the month is based completely on the moon. So every new month begins on the new moon. And that's why we, the Kabbalists, make a very big emphasis the day before the new moon, the actual day of the new moon, and the full moon. And most of what we call holidays or these important days, they actually correspond with where the moon is on that day. So for example, Passover is always on the full moon of the month of Aries. That's the time that Aries representing the child, you know, the baby of the zodiac, also being the most, the strongest I'm the most important one. We're not together, right? So that's what, and it was also, you know, again, it was one of the biggest gods of the Egyptians, right? It was very important for the Egyptians. The ram was one of the biggest gods that they have, which was, again, all about me, not the collective. So on the full moon, what the Kabbalists say is you get an ability to break this point of view that you are separated from others. The point of view that you are living in isolation, in separation from the society, from the universe, is always going to limit you. And as you know, and that's one thing that you always want to break. So that's one possibility of what Egypt you can leave on the full moon.
Wow, that's beautiful.
Yeah,
really recognizing that we are in relationship with the universe around us, and that those relationships have consciousness and have energy. You know, totally. Everything is conscious.
Yeah,
everything has, you know, an energy that we are in relation and dynamic with, that, you know, it's good to know what you're having conversations with, you know?
Totally.
And it organizes it into really knowing how to be empowered in those relationships. You know, if that is through ritual and tradition, if that is through a technique and ability, you know, and I couldn't imagine navigating this life without abilities of developing consciousness and having personal growth.
Me too.
I don't know how people can go through life in those other unconscious, numb ways.
It's scary.
I mean, I remember thinking I was going to create a life in a certain view and perspective of what I imagined life to be about, that was a very prescribed life at one point, and nothing worked. You know, like, to face that kind of struggle is unbelievable pain. And, you know, I know that was a big thing that the Rav talked about, was wanting to eradicate pain and struggle. And like, as you say, the definition of Kabbalah is fulfillment. You know, I know a spiritual teacher out there that my mom followed a lot is Carolyn Mace, that, you know, she talks about how we are designed for bliss. You know, that out of all animals, we actually have the most chemical receptors for bliss than any other animal. We are the most designed for bliss, for this sense of
fulfillment. That's beautiful. Wow.
You know, it's actually a certain receptor in our nervous system. And like when we're out of attunement, when we're out of alignment, it's always the thing to look at and realize there's somewhere to heal. There's a belief to work on. There's something missing. If that's a spiritual alignment and intuitive growth needed, if that's working through a belief, that's working on a manifestation of a crisis and health issue, like all these things are teachers. We're not a victim to it.
Exactly.
And, you know, that's where finding what resonates with each person, it's so important to have personal growth and finding what technique feels right for that. Because ultimately, they're all doing the same thing in some way totally. Or another. You know, it's just different practices.
Yeah.
You know, so I really appreciate finding that resonance and that and familiarity.
Yeah, me too. I'm very grateful that I like very grateful and blessed. You know, when you like really acknowledge, like what you said, you know, once you kind of like become aware of what is really possible and what really is happening and what really exists, you do look at people that don't have it. And you're like, wow, that's, I don't know if it's even life. I think it's just existence or something.
Yeah.
So beyond grateful, me too. I'm so grateful that I found, you know, all these practices and that they all come together. Also grateful, you know what, I learned something is to acknowledge your own greatness for choosing this, right? Because both of us, we could have, it almost was like not a choice for us. It was so obvious,
yeah.
But we did choose it. You chose Theta Healing. I chose Wisdom of Kabbalah, and they both led us here now. And like, wow, how does that get any better?
And we never stop growing, you know, like. Yeah. I learned Theta, but then I learned about crystals and I learned about essential oils and I learned about cleansing and nutrition and you know, now really learning about anthroposophic and biodynamic farming. And like, we're always studying and learning and growing, you know, that sense of fulfillment is not like, okay, I'm going to lock into this. This is my practice. I'm just, you know, this is the thing about life is that if we become too rigid in our patterns, then we stop learning new things. And youth is actually at every age, you know,
yeah.
Having adaptation, creating neuroplasticity, having these places of growth. And, you know, knowing you for these 6 years, you've continued to study new things and bring things together. Like, this is kind of this awesome era of humanity is that we're never stuck in one thing. There's so much that we get to explore and learn. You know, you keep studying and bringing into your teaching and to practice so many things. And I'm curious how you feel you best like to navigate that, you know, of like holding some things true as tradition and bringing new layers in, like, how do you unfold that for yourself?
That's a good question. I guess lately what I realized is I'm a Gemini, so I used to function a lot from logic. Yeah. Logic was my god, you know, my idol. If it's logical, that's what actually drew me to Kabbalah. It was like, oh, this is so logical. Like, this makes sense. That's it. But I've evolved and came to a place that I realized that it's a sense and an inner knowing that is really the best guide that you can possibly have, your compass, your guide, whatever you want to call it. So now one of the tools that my teacher, Rob Berg, recommends a lot is to pause. So whenever you do anything, take a minute and take a step back and take a different point of view on it. So whatever point of view you have, you know, look at it from a few other different points of view to make sure you get the bigger picture. Because in reality, you know, the big picture is so vast and there's so many ways to look at things. So what I do is I pause and I look at it, and it's not easy, obviously, because sometimes you have a trigger, right? You have a trigger response to something. But my aim is to go into a space of looking at it from a point of view as, that's an interesting point of view. I wonder what would that be in my life? What would that create in my life?
Yeah.
Would that contribute more? Would that give me, bring me closer to the creator? Would that bring more creative energy into my life? So asking those questions does give me more of an awareness of like, where will that lead me? But it was an evolution, because I definitely functioned only from, definitely from a very logical space.
And swift logic too, you know, Gemini yeah. can have speed yes. that is like, wow.
And having four planets in Gemini.
Wow. That's a very empowering tool. Pause.
Yes.
I really appreciate that one. You know, and Theta, it took a while before Vianna came to developing this class called You and Creator. It's one of the Growing Your Relationships courses that are really about developing mindset. And
amazing class, by the way. I remember taking it with you. So really great.
We do an exercise where you intuitively ask different energies the same questions so that you can become familiar with what is the highest truth and creator. And because sometimes being too fast in our meditations and in our dialogues can get in the way of really getting into the highest truth. And we get a little too trusting and confident in a certain mindset of conversing. And that really was life-changing for myself and for the technique of Theta to realize that just because you're in meditation and asking a question, you're not necessarily getting the highest truth. It depends on not just what the question is, but how you're asking. What mindset are you asking from? You know, like, are you coming from your survival thoughts? Are you coming from trying to fix a problem? Are you coming out of the sense of ego? Or are you really pausing to get to that higher intuition, to get to that higher place? So that element of pause is a huge growth to anybody in their spiritual personal development practice, you know, to get a higher perspective, to get higher truth, and to find a resonance with truth. So I really appreciate that one.
Yeah, me too. Me too. Life changing also.
It really.
You go from that, you know, kind of like, for lack of a better word, like a monkey mind of where you just operate, you know, think, have the same response or trigger. And then you're like, oh, wait a minute. I have an ability to have a different point of view. I have an ability to choose something else. That's really very beautiful. Yeah.
And it's a reclamation, isn't it? That really helps not lose yourself to the trigger of the limiting subconscious belief, but to actually regain free will to something else. Just that simple tool, pause.
Yeah.
It's amazing.
And you know what? I recently had such a funny experience, because I've been teaching pause and practicing it for some time already. But it's funny how you consistently can grow your ability to do it, because one of the people that are my teachers in my life that are triggers is my mom. So as she's basically been sharing something with me for 6 years, and my response was a trigger response of, I'm not interested. I don't want to know. Like, why are you telling me this? Fast forward to a month ago or 2 weeks ago, when I was actually doing a meditation, and I have no idea how, only the universe and the creator connected the dots that something that I've been working on is something that my mom has been telling me for 6 years. And it just dawned on me, and it wasn't even logical. Like, I didn't connect the dots myself, but they connected. And it was like, you know, one of those moments in the movies when things connect and everything lights up, and I'm like, oh my God, like, wow. But I was unwilling to pause in that area in my life, so I wasn't willing to receive. So it was a beautiful lesson for me. But like, wow, your ability and your practice is ever evolving.
Oh, that's beautiful. That's a great layer to it, a level to it.
Yeah.
Nice. So beautiful. I know for myself, you know, you bring up the parents piece. We're both dads.
Yeah.
It's something that is so imperative in parenting is pause as well. You know, to pause, take that breath so that you can take in the awesome opportunity and moment with your child and to not get triggered and become reactive. You know, when we lose our free will as parents, we actually let our ancestors parent for us instead of ourselves.
Mm-hmm.
We have all these genetic programs of what a child's supposed to be, what a parent is supposed to be, and we are programmed. It's in our DNA, you know, and when we get triggered and react, you're acting out past generations, not actually conscious parenting. And, you know, that pause becomes such a huge element in navigating our subconscious. You know, we're always running through beliefs, and subconscious is not all limiting negative beliefs, but it is always swift and is an undercurrent and is a reactivity, you know, that drives motion. It can be the whispers behind the thoughts and things. And so, you know, these tools, as you say, pause, or if you do realize that a bigger issue is happening, learning how to actually reprogram the subconscious and discover and shift out of these belief systems is so important so that we can appreciate and feel fulfilled and make the best out of these relationships we have, you know?
Completely.
So huge. And with that, we are Mythic Life, free thinkers, deep feelers, courageous trailblazers. We own our myth with our vibes, how we think, feel, and act. We believe that love is a given, not something earned. That spiritual is sexy, kindness is cool, and earth is sacred. That everybody has superpowers and life is too boring without magic. We walk our talk, and when life gets real, we heal. And, you know, I just want to thank you once again for coming on today and sharing with us these profound, incredible techniques and these mystical practices. You know, I really appreciate you, Michael. You're an incredible person.
Same.
Genuine and have an incredible heart. So thank you so much.
Thank you. Thank you, Eric. Thank you, everyone. Huge thank you. Appreciate you. Honor you. So grateful for you in general and in my life. So thank you very much.
Absolutely. And for all of the audience out there, if you aren't subscribed, please subscribe to our podcast. Get this message out there. You know, life is too hard without these abilities, you know, and growing and having personal growth is such a huge key. So like, if this is something new, please come to our healing circle, reach out if you want to discover how Theta Healing and Mythic Life can help you, or, you know, listen to your heart, look for tools, look for these techniques. If you're unfamiliar with Michael's work and with the teachings of the Kabbalah Center or any of these other modalities he practices, you know, his link is in the description. So please connect and share. And thank you all for joining today. It was wonderful to connect with you.
Thank you.